And good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now tonight on the show, we will be speaking to the former United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, Philip Alston. Now in his final report on Malaysia, Philip raised concerns of a reversal on the government's commitment to eradicate poverty and the problems that lie with the current poverty line measure. We're going to be delving deeper into the details of his report in about 20 minutes or so, but first, today is the 50th anniversary of the Rukun Negara. And there's been a lot of discussion about its continued relevance. The Rukun Negara calls for an equal society as well as for greater unity. The question is, have we lived up to these principles?
Yeah, Melissa, it's also a question of whether these principles enunciated in the way they are, you know, written in the backs or printed in the backs of exercise books. You know,
yes.
I was growing up and I think generations then, since then have had this, you know, whether that actually makes a difference. I mean, does that oath that young kids take in schools, and I don't know if they do it on a daily basis or
right.
once a week, does that actually make them live those principles?
Well, we can memorize it for sure. I mean, all of us can probably recite the Rukun Negara by heart. The question is, do we live by its principles? Do, you know, just taking these oaths, does that ensure that, you know, the people of Malaysia are living up to the principles of Rukun Negara? Or is it about creating policies that are inclusive, that make us feel, make everyone feel like they are an equal part of this country?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Melissa. You know, the question of policies actually driving the character of the fabric of our society, whether it's warm, thin, or whether it's strong and resilient, really is a function of both government, also markets and private enterprises, and just the general layer of the country, right? So what is the value in enunciating these objectives?
Well, do you remember a couple of years ago, Sharad, there was that proposal, it turned into a movement to make the Rukun Negara into the preamble to the federal constitution. Do you remember that? It didn't gain as much traction, or perhaps it kind of died out in recent times. But the idea was to include this in our constitution. I wonder whether that would change things up. Would that make it any different?
Well, yeah, maybe perhaps as a constitutional guarantee, but I don't know what the legalities of putting this as the preamble is.
Right?
But
yeah.
I do, and I think notable voices in on this side of that proposal, you know, the veteran law professor Salim Shahid Farooqi. Now, in a piece he wrote in 2017, reminds us also that, you know, beyond the five statements that you have on the back of exercise books, there's also this concern about democracy, about a just society, a liberal approach towards our rich and varied cultural traditions.
Right.
These are also things that are not often talked about. In fact, in a language now, you know, thoroughly demonized, like the word liberal is demonized, you know, almost on a daily basis.
Mm.
So what is it that a discussion like this could generate beyond the kind of political platitudes, which,
right.
of course, we hear too much of?
That's exactly true. How do we as a people and also as our policies really embody the principles of Rukun Negara? Let's turn our attention now to the East Coast Rail Link, or the ECRL, and reports that the Ministry of Transport is considering reverting to the original ECRL alignment. So the Transport Minister, Wee Ka-siong, has denied claims that the realignment proposal was aimed to purposefully exclude Negeri Sembilan, which is currently Pakatan-led. Now, just a quick refresher for those who may not remember, the old alignment ran through 24 stations. But under the Pakatan Harapan government, the number of stations were cut to 20. Now, while that line was realigned to go through Seremban to avoid digging a costly 17-kilometre tunnel through the Klanggate Quartz Ridge, which is, incidentally, the longest pure quartz formation in the world. So there is, you know, an extreme environmental cost to big projects like this, but I'm hoping that the ecological casualty of a project like the ECRL can be contained.
Yeah, Melissa, so we go back to that initial, thing that you noted about the concerns that this realignment is purely a political one, that it's being done either to marginalize...
Well, that were the allegations, right?
These allegations, right? Yeah. But the question is, so where do we go? I mean, as a member of the public who don't have the cost-benefit analysis report before them, who perhaps, will hear numbers thrown on both sides saying that this alignment would benefit people more rather than, the other person's
alignment. Because they're depending on, they're looking at connectivity, they're looking at the viability of passengers, saying that some routes mean more passengers can use the alignment.
The question is, who do you believe? I mean, because both sides are making claims that this is of better or greater benefit to the greater number of people.
Right.
But I think the Klang-Gates Quartz Ridge issue is actually very important in that, in many ways, it tips the balance in this argument about numbers and future numbers of passengers and who will benefit. Is the question of the cost, the irreparable damage that might be done to a world heritage and a national heritage, I think more importantly, that will not be recoverable if they go ahead with one plan, which is the reversion to the old plan.
Well, the Klang-Gates Quartz Ridge is internationally recognized as a one-of-a-kind geological site. In fact, it's so rich in vegetation that's unique to the area. Five species of plants are found that only exist there. It's also the location of the Klang-Gates Dam, which is built to store water for KL and the Klang Valley. And I do want to say that while the ECRL could provide a very kind of clean and efficient transportation mode for people and goods, we really have to make sure that there is absolute transparency in how much land will be used, if there will be any forested areas that will be taken down. What is the environmental cost for such a large project? It must be contained.
Yeah, but Melissa, there's also this other thing about the culture of development, right? The politicization of development. For 60 years, states like Kelantan that was once opposition held, or once the party that held it, they're now, of course, in government, once in opposition, were marginalized and so on and so forth. The idea that development was not a right and could be withheld by federal government if you were in opposition. Now, this is something we need to get a kind of grip of, right? Mm-hmm. Can we change the political culture in this country so that no matter what the choice of the choice that is made by those people in the various states, that they have a right to that development, that cannot be denied to them, that every MP gets equal amounts in terms of development aid and so on and so forth? Is that culture there for us to be, to kind of reassure us that decisions are not being made for political and partisan reasons?
Something to consider there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking to Philip Alston, whose report on poverty in Malaysia was released earlier this week. Stay tuned to consider this.